get in place. Thank you very much. As the mother of one middle schooler and one near to be middle schooler, now I'm frightened. No. In your packets are cards for question and answer, and that is how we will do the question and answer. So, while everyone gets in place up here for the next part of this, if you would like to write a question, and then we'll have a collection of those so that we can facilitate an orderly question and answer period, that would be terrific. Okay. Which one of you? Janet, you look
sure.
Ready to go.
Ready.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. And I will, should we say about 10,
sure.
15 minutes? And then if you guys have to interact with each other, respond to anything, and then we'll go for the question and answer period here. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Well, first of all, good morning. Thank you all for inviting me. I hope I can share some of my experiences. Both a business person and a citizen of the world who's been traveling this world since I was 17 and have seen phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal changes in the world as we've moved into this age of globalism. So I hope I can share some thoughts with you. I don't have any speaking problem in terms of my voice. What I do intend to do, though, is be conversational as well, just like Mr. Harkness. Okay. Everybody here up in the back? Okay. So I was going to start out, first of all, with, since I'm a lawyer, I always get to start out with caveats. Two caveats. I realize that a CEO, even a former CEO, coming into a public arena in this age of CEO bonuses, options, and severance packages is probably a dangerous environment. And I know you're all probably thinking, why should we care what business needs with the excesses of business that we're all seeing around us? And for purposes of today's discussion, I urge you to put that aside. None of us like it any better than you do. But we are in an unbelievable changing time in which we all have to work together. And I don't think there's been a time in our American economic and political history when we haven't needed each other more than we do now. Because one of the absolute hallmarks of this global age is that capital can travel anywhere. And so it's exceedingly important for both government and the private sector to really work together to figure out what can we do to keep and attract capital here. And the second caveat I have is that none of us at this table, or Tom Friedman, or anyone else that you read or listen to can possibly predict with any kind of precision what this is all going to mean for you. First of all, it's an evolving concept, globalization, but second of all, it is changing absolutely as we sit here today. As I traveled and all the rest of you who traveled the world in the late 90s, it was an absolutely open world. It was optimistic. It was full of belief that we were at the dawn of an age of no war, great borderless, great open, welcoming world. Americans were seen as absolutely leaders of innovation and role models for the whole world. Here we are 10 years later, and I'm afraid the doors are closing very quickly. And much of what has gone on may, in fact, change. We may go back to somewhat of a Cold War. Their part of the world, our part of the world, supply chains may be challenged. So anything that has happened may change in the future, which I know makes your job that much tougher. But just want you to bear in mind, this is a really, really challenging time for you to try to anticipate what's coming. So what I've tried to do is just list what I think are kind of four underpinnings of what I'd call the information age, the service economy, globalization, this whole dramatic new age that we're in. Because all you can do is try to take the underpinnings and say, if those are the underpinnings, then what are the implications for us? And I've listed a few things under each one of them that directly apply to you and things that you could do to ensure that Minnesota and our economy remains a competitive advantage for our state. The first is, absolute underpinning is, we are in the age of consumerism. Power has shifted to the individual. When that mainframe went to that little box on your desk, it was more than just a change in how you access your information. That is an absolute imagery of what has happened. The power has shifted to the individual, and that will be felt in all areas that you apply to. Individuals expect better service, better delivery. They know they have the power to move. They're less impressed with big bureaucratic solutions. So the power of the individual is one of the underpinnings of globalization. And I've told this little anecdote before, but I have had absolutely no qualms speaking to the men and women on our shop floor at Tenet when they would say, promise me we'll always have jobs here. And I'll say, did any of you shop at Walmart this weekend? Nothing against Walmart. But you can't expect low consumer prices on Saturday and wonder why your jobs are going to China on Monday. They are directly linked. The consumer expects lower and lower and more efficient delivery of product and service to them, and that has to drive a lower and more efficient production of those products and services, whether it's government services or whether it's consumer goods. So hugely important, and I would urge all of you who aren't well-grounded in the principles of capitalism, they've never been more important than right now. I've always said we America's works because we have kind of a natural tension between our democratic political system and our capitalistic economic system. And I continue to believe that, but it is the balance is shifting much more to the capitalist side. And so it's very important that you all understand the principles of capitalism so you know how they're going to apply to the economy of the state. Second underpinning is innovation. And you picked up the paper this morning and you see that Boston Scientific is shutting down 500 jobs here, and they're in their long-term research because they have to meet their short-term profit because they were bought by merger. So there's all kinds of inconsistencies around innovation, but innovation is what is driving globalization. When you go to China and India, their goal is not to be the low-cost producer. Their goal is to go up the supply chain and ultimately become the most innovative country and economy in the world. So innovation, those parts of the world economy who can harness and capture innovation and turn it into the next Google or the next driver of their economy is hugely important. So one thing I would urge you to think about is, this is my personal belief, but I think we absolutely need a world-class research institute in this state. But it probably cannot, we cannot afford to be world-class in every discipline. So the real question is, what are the real drivers of Minnesota's economy going to be? Is it going to be agro-based? Is it going to be nano? Is it going to be med device-based? What is it going to be? But we need a world-class research institute because you build that critical mass out of which comes the innovation that then leads to the next Google. And having the next Google in your state's not just good for your economy. Google's the very best company in the country to work for, so it's good for employees as well. Another challenge to you is that innovation, as Mr. Harkness has already said, certainly applies to how do you deliver government services. You have three big challenges: education, energy, and healthcare. And Katrina, if nothing else, I think has embedded a great cynicism in our population that government does not work. It cannot effectively work. It brings industrial age approaches to information age problems, and that's a real challenge. And I would urge you, as I watch China over 20 years, their absolute principle is innovation begins at the edges. Do not bring big centralized planning structures to solve problems in the 21st century. Have a lot of innovation on the edges. Give a lot of leeway for a variety of efforts, and then find the ones that work and then spread them out. But we are coming out of an industrial age where we had an assembly line approach to everything, and now we're in the information age, and it's a very, very different operating model, and you need to bring it to government delivery services as well. Third principle, energy and water are critical. Everywhere you go in the world, India, China, anywhere, their biggest impediment, they believe their biggest impediment to their own economic success is the challenge of scarce resources. So we hear a lot in Minnesota, we've got alternatives, whether it be wind energy, whether it be biofuels, great opportunity. I would urge one caution, very few economies that rely on a single source like oil or tin or any other natural resource, very few of those provide very big, broad, stable economies. They tend to put a lot of resources in the hands of a few because it doesn't generally take that many jobs to transform the natural resource to the byproduct. So it's a great opportunity for us to take what we have, but it's a caution that it's easy to ride that opportunity and not think about how to build a big, strong economy around it. And the last one is, regardless of how polarized our world may become and whether there are parts of the world that will be off limits to us, there is still a very big expanse of world out there. And one thing employers are really looking for is global employees. So the more in education you can stress languages, the more you can urge that students live abroad. One of the most challenging problems for Minnesota employers is to get Minnesota employees to go live in other countries. And we have, I have heard, the largest proportion of the state is made, we have more people in our population who grew up here and are from here than any other state. It's a great compliment that nobody wants to leave, but it does not bode well for having a cosmopolitan global workforce that can really support the global companies of the future. And I just wanted to close with hope, because it's easy to sit with a litany of what are all the challenges going to be. I think Minnesota is in a better position than a lot of parts of the country or a lot of parts of the world. One is location doesn't mean as much as it used to. So it's still probably more attractive on the coast, but the coasts are becoming exceedingly dense and unworkable. We're in a very good position to maintain a large, cosmopolitan, attractive area. Global warming's making it even more attractive. That works. So that works is a very important element. Minnesota, of the 50 states, has a great track record for innovation. I mean, we are seen as a part of the country where if you said, what state do you think might come up with breakthrough thinking in healthcare, breakthrough thinking in education? I'm not sure energy yet, but we might fool them. It would be Minnesota. So we have a track record. And then the last is we have a great foundation to build on. Anybody who tells you about bringing about change says there's nothing better than having a great foundation to build on. The caution is don't let that great track record lull you into complacency. That's the real risk. Is if you go to China and India and any of these countries, they are hungry, just as we were hungry at the beginning of the 20th century to outdo Europe. They are hungry to outdo us. And the real risk of being one of the better places that succeeded in the 20th century is that we will lull ourselves into complacency and wait too long to be take very seriously that we have to work hard to maintain that position in the 21st century.